Menace Nation, it's Menace Morning Time.
Wake 'em up.
I don't do the most, but I do a lot.
Tryna hide from the camera.
I'ma make a toast, cause we still alive.
I ain't going outside today.
No big.
Couldn't find our tick. So I'm drinking on Accutane.
I feel like Pac.
I'ma pull up my style. We gon' do a drive-by in the rain.
I shoot a shot. I'm coming in.
I'ma take it to trial. Pray the Lord, I beat the case. That man be calling.
It is Thursday, January 27th. Welcome to Menace in the Morning. Thank you to all of our listeners who are still listening to Chris and I talk shit, basically. Mm-hmm. Talk about the current events in football. I do have some you know, main episodes planned. They're just taking longer than usual. I guess people are really busy. But I've talked to Jameson Williams, talked to Tate Martell. Probably going to try to get Garrett and or Chris Olave on the show. I'm going to have Eric Lichter come on, and we're going to do some football, I guess, athlete development episodes, because I know we've done a couple of those kind of football 101 or football IQ episodes. So I'm looking forward to some of the stuff we have planned, but I appreciate everybody for tuning in. The only thing of house cleaning or housekeeping that I have to mention is our Super Bowl big board is up and running. If you want to be a part of it, we obviously are going to donate proceeds to our charity, the Zone 6 Fund. If you're unfamiliar with it, the Zone 6 Fund is going to scholarship inner city athletes. The initial phase is just going to scholarship them to elite training with Eric Lichter at Plus 2 University, just to try to get them, you know, better facilities, better training, better coaching, to try to increase the success rate of football players in the inner city of Columbus. That's the starting point. And then we're going to eventually lead into academic support, and we're going to take them to camps, try to get them scholarships, exposure, that kind of stuff. Just trying to raise the level of football in the city of Columbus, and, you know, use it as an avenue to influence kids and better lives, right? Change lives and better these kids' opportunities, essentially. So, big board for the Super Bowl, $100 a square, Venmo, Cameron Media, no underscore, no space, just Cameron Media, $100 a square. The payouts are $500 first quarter, $1,000 halftime, $500 third quarter, and $3,000 for the final score. And if you watch the national championship game, that pick six was something else. And I don't want to keep bringing it up because the guy that was going to win is one of our loyal subscribers and a friend of mine. And I felt awful about it. But anyways, check out the big board. Go Venmo Camera Media, $100 per square you want, and let's win some money and raise some money. That's the moral of the story. Chris, how are you doing on this fine Thursday morning?
Living the dream. Nice little Friday Eve action, Friday Eve show. So yesterday, Zach, we talked about the possibility for Ohio State to have the best wide receiver, the best running back, and the best quarterback in the nation on the same offense. And we said we couldn't remember the last time that it happened in its truest form. And a couple people called us out, you know, giving us a couple things. Someone, the best argument I thought was 2020 Bama, but we'll talk about that in a sec. One person said Ken Dorsey, Willis McGahee, and Andre Johnson were all the best. That was the best quarterback, running back, wide receiver. And then someone else, that same person also said Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush, and Dwayne Jarrett were also the best at their positions. Zach, what do you think? Were they the best, or is that cap?
I mean, just because you know someone's name doesn't mean they were the best, right? I saw the list that you typed up, and it's like, okay, Willis McGahee was absolutely one of the best running backs in the country. Andre Johnson was an absolute monster. I'll buy that. But Ken Dorsey was fucking awful. Like, what are we talking about? Like, we talk about the best. We're talking about the best. We're not talking about good. We're not talking about system fit. By that same narrative, Craig Krenzel was the best quarterback in 2002, the next year. I mean, Ken Dorsey was not a good quarterback. I mean, he had success because they were so fucking loaded at Miami. Ken Dorsey was, I mean, if Eric Crouch was the Davey O'Brien award winner that year, he was a better quarterback than Ken Dorsey. So there goes that argument right out the fucking window. But you can't just take that Miami team, that 2001 Miami team, who was unbelievable. Their defense was stupid. Their running back room was ridiculous. Their skill everywhere, ridiculous. One of the best teams in the history of college football. Their quarterback was a game manager who didn't have success in the NFL. I mean, just wasn't a great player. So we're not crowning Ohio State as having the best three. It's just they have the potential to, right? CJ Stroud has the potential to be the best quarterback in the country. He shits on Ken Dorsey. I mean, he eats Ken Dorsey for breakfast. He was better than Ken Dorsey this past year, let alone next year after a year of development. So no, that is not a valid argument. Now, is that 2001 Miami team better than the 2022 Ohio State team? Probably. They probably will be in the end of the day, even if Ohio State wins it all. But no, that's a ridiculous argument. And 2020 Bama is an interesting argument because I love Mac Jones. I don't think he was the best quarterback in the country, but he was right there.
And they completed the triple crown, quote unquote, of the award circuit.
Yeah, right. And that's probably the greatest example of what I'm talking about, right? And so I'll buy that one. So that is the standard, or that is the benchmark. That's the bar that I'm talking about Ohio State trying to reach, right? And so, I mean, Najee Harris was absolutely ridiculous, best running back in the country. Obviously, Devontae Smith was the best player, best receiver in the country. Mac Jones was one of the best quarterbacks in the country. So, yes, that is a valid argument. Miami in 2001, I mean, you can miss me with that bullshit. I mean, Ken Dorsey was not a good player. I'm sorry. So, no. Now, Willis McGahee and Andre Johnson, I'll buy those two stock. And the other one that you have listed is USC, back when they had Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush, and Dwayne Jarrett. Again, two of the best. Matt Leinart was the best quarterback. Reggie Bush was the best player, best running back, best everything. Dwayne Jarrett was just an average-ass fucking player. Not average. That's not fair. He was above average, but best receiver in the country. He wasn't even a finalist in the Biletnikoff Award. I mean, he ended up playing in the NFL for like three seasons, unless you want to count the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. So the answer is no for USC, no for Miami. 2020 Bama, I'll give you that. Even you go back, 2019 LSU, absolutely. Jamar Chase, Joe Burrow, Clyde Ebers-Helaire, no. He was up there, and we already talked about him yesterday. But so I don't know, and I'm here for any example. I mean, I certainly haven't really studied the last 40 years of college football, but you know, on this topic. But I'm trying to think. I can't think of one, and those are the two best examples outside of 2020 Bama that I can think of, and it's a no for both.
You know, it's funny because I actually think that 2019 LSU has a better argument for having the best quarterback, best receiver, and best running back than 2020 Bama, mainly because they had, at least on that team, their respective years in the draft, they had the first player of each position off the board first. Like, Mac Jones wasn't the number one overall pick. Now, I know that draft stock isn't everything, but the fact that Joe Burrow was the number one quarterback off the board, Jamar Chase was the number one receiver off the board his respective year, and then Clyde Edwards-Helaire was the number one running back off the board. I think that's the best example, the closest we've seen. But 2020 Bama did have, you know, they completed that triple crown circuit. But I do think no matter what, it's super rare air, and I think Ohio State had a chance to do that. I just think that Mac Jones was not a better quarterback than Justin Fields or Trevor Lawrence. And so for that matter, I wouldn't give that to them, but he did win the Davey O'Brien Award. So it is interesting, but Ohio State, you know, they have the potential to do that. And I want to use that to kind of move into my next topic. I'm going out of order here, Zach. So, forgive me, but if CJ Stroud has a big year again, and you know, kind of hits these benchmarks that we think he is capable of hitting, do you think he's remembered by Ohio State fans as a better player than Justin Fields? Is he more beloved?
He's going to have to do a lot to take that torch, right? And most of it is going to come from kind of his presence, his mentality, his personality. Justin Fields was square-jawed, Navy SEAL-esque, like ran the ball tough as shit, took hits, bounced up. I mean, he was a competitor in all sense of the word. And so I guess statistically, CJ Stroud already has surpassed Justin Fields when it comes to just throwing the football, right? I mean, he threw for more yards. I guess he had what, three more interceptions than Justin had in his first season as a quarterback. But I mean, he's, as far as grade wise, they're right about the same on Pro Football Focus for their first year. CJ Stroud, I think, is a, you know, maybe slightly better thrower, but to surpass the legend that, you know, the legacy that Justin Fields left behind. Justin Fields was more than just a quarterback, right? When he ran the ball, he killed people. When his approach to the game was different, right? And you look at great quarterbacks, young quarterbacks in the NFL right now. You look at Joe Burrow and what he's doing. Yeah, he throws the ball well. Yeah, he's a good quarterback. He has good accuracy, he has good arm strength, he has all of that. But it's the clip that you even retweeted on the Menace of Sports page of they zero blitzed him and he took it in the face and delivered a strike for a touchdown and came off the field. He's like, you can't fucking zero blitz me. Like, it's that mentality, it's that personality, it's that swagger that CJ Stroud needs to develop to even breathe the same rare air that Justin Fields took in his lungs. Right. And so that's the difference right now. Does he have the capability? Of course. But it's going to take a personality adjustment or development or enhancement to even touch Justin Fields. The other part of it is if CJ Stroud can win a national championship, he's got something to see that Justin Fields doesn't. He's got a ring, a big ass fucking ring, too. One of those ones that you pick your hand up and it falls down and hits the table.
No, I generally agree with what you're saying. You know, Joe Burrow and Justin Fields both have kind of that no flinch, true gun barrel toughness. And in that clip that I retweeted, I actually tweeted two clips kind of back to back days. The one, the retweet of Joe Burrow, he got hit in the face. He got hit in the face on that zero blitz, got hit hard. And the first thing he did was get up and look where the ball was. And a lot of quarterbacks I've seen, when that same thing happens, they'll get up, Zach, and they'll look at the ref. Like, where's the flag? Or they'll get up and they'll throw their arms up, you know, similar to how Trevor Lawrence did. And really, Justin Fields and Joe Burrow have gun barrel toughness. And I'll say this. If one of those two was the starting quarterback for Ohio State, I do not believe they would allow Ryan Day to sit them out for a game. Like what happened with CJ Stroud at Akron.
No, absolutely not.
Justin Fields got his knee rolled up on very badly, missed one play. Justin Fields probably cracked a few ribs, you know, in that Clemson game and came back the very next play. And what did he do? He threw a touchdown and walked to the sideline, no flinching him at all. So I think that, you know, legacy-wise, it'll be tough for CJ Stroud to get there. He'll have a chance, though, if he wins a natty, but he's going to need that natty to make up for the fact that he lost him.
Yeah, he definitely needs that championship to put him over the edge. And he does need to develop that leadership and toughness to be in that conversation. That's what needs to happen.
I do some news from the good old rival, Mike McDonald. Rumor has it, he's going to back to the Ravens to go be the DC there. And that's the Michigan defensive coordinator. So someone tweeted, as you know, Mike McDonald's getting passed around the Harbaugh brothers. Like, what's going on here? And what does that mean for next year?
Well, I think it was kind of like when, you know, you're watching the Cleveland Indians and there's a pitcher that is, you know, is starting to come on and they're like, you know what? He needs more game experience. Let's send him down to the minors, get him some experience, and then bring him back up to get him in the rotation. It's like, that's what the Harbaughs are doing. The Michigan is the minor leagues for the Ravens, right? They're just, they're dropping coaches down like, hey, I'm going to send you to my brother, give you a year to run a defense. I'll watch the film, see how you do, might bring you back. And then he watched the film and he was like, wow, I like what he did. I'm going to bring him back. So it truly is. Michigan is the Ravens
squad.
Yeah, the Ravens farm team for coaches. Big brother and little brother are passing coaches back and forth. I guess, you know, on the surface, that's what it looks like. But a deeper dive tells you, well, who do you trust more than your family? Like, you send a guy a great coach because he needs a great defensive coordinator. Your coordinator, you fire your coordinator, and you need a great coordinator. You call your brother and say, hey, how'd my guy do? How was he? Right? And you're going to get an honest answer, right? And I'm sure Jim Harbaugh didn't want to lose him, but you're going to be honest to your brother, right? If Bill Belichick calls Harbaugh and asks that question, I'm sure it's going to be a much different answer than his brother calling him. So good for him. Michigan's, you know, in a little bit of a transition now because they lost all those veteran players. Now they lost their D coordinator. Josh Gattis is back. So that's, I guess, a refreshing thought because he really did a good job this past year. But I think Michigan is in a transition year. And I think to expect anything close to the results of 2021 for the Wolverines is just nuts. I mean, just absurd.
Setting yourself up for failure. Someone said that, our guy Jacob said he's being passed around like a, like a, like it's a dirty co-ed or something.
Like a SETI. You ever heard like of a SETI?
No, I never heard of a SETI.
That's what football players at Ohio State used to call a girl that just got passed around the team. One of those jersey chasers that just wanted to be with a football player, wanted to hook up with a football player. And they used to there were stories for days about, you know, all the different guys that hooked up with one girl. One of the players is married to one. So we'll leave that at that. We're not going to go there, but I don't know how you do that. I don't know how you're in a locker room and in a serious committed relationship with a girl that's been passed around half the football team. I don't know how you do that. But I guess that's what they're doing with coaches.
Hey, more power to him. But he probably, I mean, he won't be going at the guys' nights. That is definitely not ideal. There was a comment about, Caleb Williams potentially to Wisconsin and the connections there. And Bobby Carpenter chimed in on a post that we were tagged in talking about Wisconsin has no shot at him. There's no way they'll be able to get to the bid, which he claims is about a $5 million to get Wisconsin to, to get Caleb Williams to Wisconsin. Now, my thought on this was, honestly, if the relationship's there and Wisconsin boosters and people around Wisconsin know that there's a chance that they have a seat at the table, I think that $5 million is something they can come up with. I don't really know how the booster situation is set up over there at Wisconsin. But what do you think? Do you think if Caleb Williams, if the asking price was $5 million, do you think Wisconsin could come up with that kind of money?
Absolutely. I mean, Bobby Carpenter makes a statement like that, and it's based on the fact that Wisconsin isn't as fiscally supported as a program like Ohio State. And that's definitely true. But that doesn't mean they can't pony up cash to get a great player if they want to, right? I mean, they got the guy Herb Cole, who is a four-term U.S. senator, the guy that used to own the Milwaukee Bucks. He sold it for $550 million. He's worth about $300 million. He could cut the check because he wipes his ass with that much money a year. So, yes, they have the money if they want to. They certainly have five boosters that have enough money that they could all donate $1 million to get a great player to come to Wisconsin if they want to, right? It's if they think that'll push them over some hump, over some edge to achieve a higher level of success. Like right now, if you look at Wisconsin, and I mentioned this when we talked about it earlier, they're not just a quarterback away. They also need to go get some skill players. They also need to get some receivers, some dynamic playmakers on offense. They need a Jonathan Taylor running back. They need those things to be a contender. If we're talking, I mean, what are we talking about? What's the bar here? What's the goal? Is the goal to win the Big Ten? You got to beat Ohio State. You're going to need more than just Caleb Williams. But that being said, they definitely can fundraise that money. $5 million. I mean, you talk about if you get 50 people to give $100,000. I mean, they definitely have 50 boosters that'll donate $100,000. I mean, the guy I mentioned, Herb Cole, just gave them $25 million for a new basketball arena not long ago. So they definitely have the support if they want to do it. And if they think that Caleb Williams puts them over that hump. So it all comes down to what is their goal? I mean, Wisconsin's been successful. They've been to the Big Ten championship game. They haven't gotten over that peak where they've won a Big Ten championship and went to a playoff that type of level. They've had the defense to do it. It's always been offensively. They just don't have the offensive skill and don't have the quarterback play to compete at that level. And so if they have a group of boosters that say, you know what, we want our program to compete at that level, they 100% can come up with the money to pay Caleb Williams $5 million.
Yeah, and with the candidate thing as well, I mean, they're looking for an OC. And, you know, if Bobby Engram invites a chance for them to get Caleb Williams, that strengthens his, you know, case to get the job. So, you know, I think the goal should be to win the Big Ten. And and Caleb Williams certainly helps that because he is such a dynamic player. And we think he can be an elite player. He's not one yet, but we think he can be an elite player.
Yeah, but further to the point, like Caleb Williams, I've listened to his dad in interviews. I've really paid attention more intently to his process than most. They're not just out for a paycheck. That is certainly a big part of it, but they're sitting in Oklahoma. You bring Brent Venables in, he hires the staff he hires, and they say, you know what? We're trying to get developed for the NFL, right? And if they have a coach that is going to come from the NFL and be the coordinator that they have known, it's a family friend, that provides value where they might take $3 million instead of $5 million because they know what they're getting, they're comfortable, they have trust, and they know that it's an investment for that draft pick, right? And so I don't think it's entirely about money for them. It definitely is a part of it, but it's big picture money, not just short term money.
Long money. No, you're absolutely right. Long money. And honestly, if you look at kind of, I mean, Brent Venables brought in a kind of Clemson staff. And if you've seen, you know, recently Clemson with quarterbacks, it hasn't kind of been ideal for development. I mean, it's well documented guys have regressed. And so, and with a defensive minded head coach, I mean, I understand Caleb Williams wanting to get drafted, and his dad's always been about that the entire way through. Speaking of winning the Big Ten is discussing potentially moving to an 8-game Big Ten schedule and eliminating divisions, and also potentially moving when the game is played. Now, this is a couple things. This kind of evens the playing field a little better and allows for less opportunities of cannibalization if we, you know, leave out that extra Big Ten game. But it also means not as much good football. But Zach, I just want to get your thoughts on kind of, should the Big Ten do this? Are they doing something right, or do you think this is a bad decision?
Well, this is entirely a reaction to the SEC adding Oklahoma and Texas, right? And this not even unspoken. It's a spoken alliance with the Pac-12 and ACC that they are going to not create a super conference, but really focus on scheduling, you know, interconference or you know, crossover games between the three conferences. So it's going to be tough to do that at a high clip if you have 9 Big Ten games, right? Because you need your money games to start the season, and or, you know, just almost a JV game every now and then. Otherwise, it's going to be tough to run the table. And then, so to add this game, it makes sense, right? Drop an 8 game schedule. I've never been a fan of divisions in football, because you end up leaving out the second best team in conference championship games at times. And who's not here for a rematch game, right? We saw it. We've seen it happen multiple times in multiple conferences where a team loses. I mean, shit, we just saw it in the SEC championship game and then the national championship game, right? And so who's not here for that? Who would rather have Michigan go beat the brakes off of an Iowa team instead of playing Ohio State a second time, when everyone knows Ohio State is the second best team in the conference? So I'm all about getting rid of divisions. I think divisions were stupid to begin with. They force-fed Ohio State, Michigan to be in the same side, knowing that they're probably the two best teams. I mean, they are the two best teams in the conference regularly, almost every year. And so you're guaranteeing with divisions that the second best team in the conference is not playing for the conference championship. And what you're doing in the Big Ten specifically is you're guaranteeing that almost at a 95% clip that the conference championship is really won in the regular season, in that last game of the year in the rivalry game. And whoever wins that is going to go on and win the Big Ten. I mean, that's just what has happened every year. So I'm here for it. I get it. It's a reaction to the SEC, you know, becoming a super conference, and it's their, you know, their shitty way of trying to, I don't know, create an alliance with the ACC and Pac-12, I guess.
And we've seen, I mean, Utah, Oregon this year, they played twice. We've seen it in the past with Texas and Oklahoma in the Big 12. But I am curious to see, because I know ESPN is going to shit on this idea, saying nobody wants to see a rematch, even though the SEC, obviously we saw the SEC championship game, and then the national title is a rematch as well, and they were pumping that up. But I am curious. I think it's interesting. I wonder if it does happen, if you'll get like 2 pairs of gold pants if you're Ohio State. And with the removing of divisions, would you move the game from, instead of being the last week of the year, to kind of put it on a regular schedule, like kind of bump it around every now and again?
No, you got to leave that right where it is, right after Thanksgiving.
That's what I thought too, but I didn't want to be a traditional.
You do bring up an interesting point though. Like, what happens with gold pants? What if you beat Michigan in the regular season and lose to them in the Big Ten championship game? Like, right. What happens? Do you get gold pants? You beat Michigan, but you also lost to Michigan, didn't win the Big Ten. Like, do you get gold pants? That's a hell of a point. I don't know. Or do you have to beat? You have to. Are the gold pants?
You have to sweep them.
Yeah, like the gold pants used to be for beating Michigan, but now is it for not losing to Michigan? Is it for being undefeated against Michigan? Like, is there a new term? I'm gonna have to reach out to Jim Lachey and the gold pants committee and find out what will the gold pants committee decide that the stipulations are to win gold, to get gold pants. Like, is it
there just be like a super Michigan gold pants, like a right. Diamond studded gold pants? If you,
right. Do you get, do you sweep? Get a gold jersey and pants? You get a gold uniform.
That gold is cleats. You could put something on a charm. I am 100% with it, but Zach, that's all I have for today. Do you have anything else that you want to get into?
No, that's it. That's it. Obviously a little slow football time, but we're going to bring some interviews and some content for you to keep you entertained as we get through this lull and get through winter and get to spring ball. Obviously the transfer portal is always popping. It's always live. So a lot of movement still going on. Where Caleb Williams ends up will be a storyline for sure. And so we are looking forward to delivering you the best content in the college football world here on Menace to Sports. So thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. We appreciate you. We will catch you tomorrow morning, Chris. Menace out.
Menace out.